Namaste and Hariom. This is your host,
Namaste.
Kishore Trivedi, welcoming you to today's episode of Know Your Dharma program on Radio Naira. As you know, this radio program is part of Know Your Dharma initiative of the Hindu Society of North Carolina. And the past recordings of these audio clips can be found on the KYD tab of hsnctemple.org website on the bottom table. Today, I'm very happy to introduce our guest, Dr. Ram Krishnamurthy. Ramji, will you please introduce yourself briefly to our listeners?
Yes. Again, thank you very much for this opportunity. My name is Ram Krishnamurthy. Actually, it's Ram Narayanan. And I'm an Associate Professor of Chemistry at the Scripps Research Institute. We have lived in San Diego for more than 20 years now. And we have a family here and also connections back in India that we try to keep alive through, our Sanatana Dharma.
Very good. The topic today is the 68th Pontiff, His Holiness Sri Chandrasekhar Saraswati Swamigal of Kanchi Kamakoti Peetham. Ramji, please tell us more about this great soul.
Okay, let me start with a prayer to him. Shruti Smriti Purana Nam Alayam Karunalayam Namami Bhagavat Pada Shankaram Loka Shankaram Apara Karuna Sindhum Jnanadam Shantarupinam Namami Chandrasekaram Gurum Mudanvaham. Jagadguru Sri Chandrasekarendra Saraswati Mahaswamigar was born in Virupuram on 20th May 1894. Virupuram is a small village in Tamil Nadu. His name as he was born was given Swaminathan Sharma, Swaminathan, and the name that he took upon becoming the head of the Kanchi Math was Chandrasekarendra Saraswati. The Kanchi Kamakoti Peetham has always this Indra Saraswati as their title. So the name was Chandrasekara combined to give Chandrasekarendra Saraswati. He was affectionately called Mahaswamigal, and he was adorning the Peetham from 13th, 1907, at the very tender age.
So that's a very, very tender age for such a big responsibility. How did he cope with it?
This, brings us to the traditions of the math and traditions of India. There were very learned people in the Kanchi Kamakoti math who trained him, and Mahaswamigal spent several years in the study of scriptures under their guidance and dharma and shastras, and acquainted himself with the role as the head of the math. They are not the ordinary sannyasis that you would see. They are treated almost like kings because they are the head of the special math that was founded by Adi Shankaracharya. But to his millions of devotees, he was simply known as Piriva or Mahapiriva, Mahaswami or Paramacharya. And so generally when people say Piriva in India or elsewhere, the first picture that comes to our mind is Chandrasekarendra Saraswati.
In fact, yeah, I remember visiting the mutt and seeing the I think it was his bust there at the mutt, right? How long was he the head of the mutt and what all did he do?
So Mahaswamigal was the mutt head for about 87 years. Though he did hand over the reins to the junior mutt much earlier. He acquired, under his guidance, the mutt really acquired a new direction, a new strength and vigor. And, the fervor and the intensity with which Sri Mahaswami, practiced the Advaita philosophy, not only the Advaita philosophy, there are many instances where he, was a savior for many other traditions as well within the Hindu Dharma. He was very important, with the importance that he gave for Veda Adhyayana and preservation of the Vedas was first and foremost. The age-old traditions and everything, he really wanted to keep them alive and referred to his in most of his talks. And he also took padayatra, pilgrimage, from place to place to meet with the people, to be in touch with the people, and to make them aware of the traditions of the Mata. And he twice undertook pilgrimages from Rameshwaram to Varanasi, Kashi in the north. And as per the tradition of the Peetham said by Adi Shankara, he walked throughout by the foot or by the traditional palanquin, which he gave up, you know, later in the stage. And he stood by the national sentiments because it was during the, you know, when he came, it was 1907. And there, of course, was the freedom movement and the struggle. And he always kept that in mind. And he always guided people in their nationalistic, you know, or in the independence towards that, keeping the Dharma, the Vedas and the tradition in mind. And he was very much instrumental in keeping the Veda Patashalas and through the Veda Rakshana Nidhi, that was first and foremost in his mind all the time. He organized very regularly sabhas or conferences, which included discussions of art, culture, you know, everything within the context of the Vedic religion. And he also invited people from international countries like Thailand, Indonesia, Burma, which had a lot of Indian traditions, you know, in their culture as well. He advocated, you know, he was very simple, and simplicity was his, you know, main goal in life. He was, shunned extravagance. And he was always, you know, though he was such a learned scholar, he could speak in simple languages that attracted both the scholars and the laymen alike. And it was always with rich in understanding and always compassionate in its delivery. He delivered it with great humor as well as great acumen so that he could relate to what the audience was able to understand or not. And finally, he attained moksha and Kanchipuram itself on 8 January 1994 on Krishna Dwadasi Day.
Yeah, in fact, it is sort of accepted that he was a Jivan Mukt, and therefore he would attain Videh Mukti upon his passing away. Can you elaborate more on Mahaswamigal's teachings?
Yes. First and foremost, he was of the, you know, complete conviction that the Sanatana Dharma was the true and first eternal religion that has morphed into various forms in the world. And I'll give you a very small example of California, which he uses in his talks. So California is actually, according to him, Kapilaranya. So Caliparnia, the L and P changed and became Kapilaranya. And to that effect, he points out to certain geographical locations here. I will not go into detail due to time, but he, you know, that such was his conviction. He would pick up on many things between the different religions and point out to the commonalities. And he would argue that the eternal religion was the Sanatana Dharma that is not conditioned by space, time, or object. The other thing that he always emphasized to our own Indian culture, Indian people, as well as foreigners, was that we do not have many gods. It is one God in many forms that we worship. For example, he would use the example of, you know, how a same person is called by different adjectives because of his relation. You can be the father, you can be the uncle, you can be the grandfather at the same time, but you are still the same person. So based on the roles and duties assigned, the gods get different names and forms, but the God is still one. Another thing, because of these two concepts, he really did not encourage any conversion between religions, even within the Hinduistic beliefs or from outside as well. So he said, if you stick to your own religion, that itself will take you to the ultimate goal of attaining God. Because if you do change, you are not only, you know, giving up your old religion and their belief, you are not even true to the concept of God, because then you are believing in two different gods. One is, you know, subverted to the other. So his conversion to another religion, he said, scorns at God with whom you have worshipped the previous day or, you know, going to do it the next time as well. Again, he was very particular about sticking to traditions, even without, you know, within the Smartha tradition or the Vaishnavite tradition. He would not want them to take each other's tradition just because they liked it. He said, you are born in the tradition, maintain the tradition, and that itself will take you to the holy path and take to God himself. Another thing he was very particular about was doing the duty according to the Varnashrama Dharma, and also the concept of Ishta Devata, where he said there is this Panchayatana Puja. And Adi Shankara kept six forms of worship as the main at that time. One was Kaumaram, based on Kumara or Skanda or Muruga. The other was, or Kartikeya, is famously known in the north. The other was Saura, which is Surya. Shaiva, which is based on Shiva. Then it is Vaishnava, which is based on Vishnu. And then based on Amba or Gauri. So he said, you know, all these are Ishtadevatas that you should follow for tradition, but try not to give up your own tradition that you are born in. And this is exactly what Krishna also says in the Bhagavad Gita. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita quite often to, you know, support his arguments. And then one of the things that he emphasizes is the devotion to God and prayer. And he says that if God is all knowing and all pervading, the question then becomes, why should we even pray to God? And the question is not for the sake of praying to God for getting things, but praying for the peace of mind. By telling our troubles to someone whom we trust, he says that our mind will get lightened. And that lightening of the mind, in terms of, you know, the load being lifted, allows us to go to what is called Chitta Shuddhi, cleanliness of the mind, in which God himself, the Paramatma, will be able to appear or manifest in a way that will help you in your spiritual growth. And he also worried very much about the education and the social service that is being done today. Education for the sake of just acquiring knowledge, he said that it must also lead to humility. If it does not lead to humility and rightness of conduct, then such education, he said, is useless. And the social service that also should be done should not be with any ulterior motives of either conversion or gaining something from the people you help. It must be a purposeless help, where the only purpose would be to help the person in their need and not expect something else later. And these all contribute to what he called the path of good life, to, you know, realize our mistakes, not repeat them, and then keep our mind true to God by devotion and prayer and, you know, good education and service to the society that will take us and, you know, prevent us from, you know, the slip and rise to the noblest heights of virtue that humankind is capable of.
In fact, this is what the Upanishad calls Shreyas, right? Shreyas versus Prayas.
Exactly. Yes. Yes, exactly.
And then there was this famous bhajan that he composed, Maitri Bhajan.
Yes. This was actually when M.S. Subbalakshmi was invited to give a concert at the United Nations in 1966. So she approached His Holiness Paramacharya and asked for his blessings and benedictions. At that time, he composed this Maitri Bhajata, a bhajan that became quite famous, and it's almost like a national prayer today in India, where, you know, it was sung to such a welcome by M.S. Subbalakshmi. And I hope we can also have a clip here, you know, during the session, or people can watch it on YouTube, where M.S. Subbalakshmi, the original recording of M.S. Subbalakshmi singing there is available. And it's a really marvelous example to see how the Hindu Sanatana Dharma tradition in India has offered this love, to eternal love to the world, and a message to mankind to shun, you know, wars, unnecessary wars, and keep peace and be happy.
So should we play that?
Maybe a little clip, you know, just to give the flavor.
Yeah, so let us stop right now and then do in the second part.
Yes.
So don't go away, we'll be right back after a short commercial break. And so...